You're about to see a lot of Ethan Hawke on the big screen over the next couple of months. He's got three films in the docket, the romantic comedy Juliet Naked, the music biography Blaze, which he co-wrote and directed, and opening this week, the drama First Reformed. The film is written and directed by Paul Schrader, and in it, Hawke plays a troubled priest named Reverend Toller.
So how are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
No, really. It's been a while since we've talked. Even a pastor needs a pastor.
You need someone to take care of you. I want you to be happy.
I know that nothing can change, and I know there is no hope.
Hawke's character in the film is not only seriously ill physically, but he's also nursing a deeper psychological wound. Years earlier, Toller insisted that his son serve in the military, and he was promptly killed in action in the Middle East. Toller now runs a small parish, and when he is unable to counsel a man convinced that man-made climate change will destroy the planet, he starts to question his role in his church and the world. When I caught up with Hawke, we started talking about why he has devoted the last few years of his career to independent film.
One of the things that's happening with independent film is it's getting, you can shoot them so much more quickly, and it becomes a certain pressure on me or other actors that there's a lot of independent films where they won't pay you. I mean, it's never been easier to get a movie, to make a movie, and it's never been harder to get one released. And so more and more, there's this thing that's happening in the industry where they want you to act in this movie and the script might be great or not. But by the way, we're not going to pay you because we don't have any money. But if it gets released, maybe, you know, you're doing everything for back end. The problem with that is it creates a scenario where you might have done two movies and still not been paid. So now you have to work. And I'm always trying to balance jobs that pay me, jobs that don't pay me. And in the last 5 years, I have not been doing as much theater. I just kind of took a break. And that has allowed me to do a lot more film work and direct and do some other things with my life, because theater has been a big lion in my year all the time. It's something I love, but it eats up a tremendous amount of my energy. And so without it, I've been able to do more film work.
Laurie Metcalf said something I thought was very interesting. She was talking about Lady Bird. She said when she's thinking about the movies that she wants to do, they're usually one of two things. This is a great project, and I want to be a part of it. These are great people, and I want to work with them. And very rarely are they both in the same thing. It's a great project with good people. Do you find that true as well, that it's hard to find something that you're really drawn to where you know you're going to have a good time collaborating with the people because they're people you want to work with? Is it often one or the other?
Very much so. I know exactly what she means. I mean, it's kind of like when you watch sports, a lot of mysterious things have to go right for a team to really excel. And some of them you can plan, and some of them you can't. Sometimes a player that's unsigned comes in and he or she ratchets the whole thing up, and sometimes the star player gets hurt, and then they excel. And then there's obvious things that you can do, you know, put yourself in a position to succeed. Good scripts, talented directors. But oftentimes, talented directors make bad movies. And oftentimes, I've had mysterious things where scripts that read really well sometimes don't play well. Particularly, it's not true of the theater. You know, a play reads like a play. You kind of know how it's going to sing. But a movie, you know, she walks into the bar, her hair casually tossed, her voice mellifluous, and you think, oh, this movie is good. Well, the bar, when you actually shoot it, the bar looks cheap, the actress isn't right, the cinematographer is a dodo brain, and all of a sudden this script that read really well is fallen dead.
I remember an actor telling me once that the mistake that so many people make when they're working with first-time directors is they always imagine the best version of that film, and that's the thing they want to do. And this person said, you have to imagine the worst version of that film and say, is that still something I want to be a part of?
Doing? Yeah.
And if the answer is no, then you don't make it.
That's a good theory. What's funny about movies is everyone's imagining their own best version. Sometimes they're not the same movie. And when they are the same movie, then you have a really good time.
Right.
And you become extensions of each other, and everybody's moving in the same, you know, everybody's moving with the current. And when those versions of the movies are repellent to each other, that's when you're in trouble.
When you are thinking about doing a film like First Reformed, what is your entry point into a film like that, and what grabs you first?
Well, what first grabs you is Paul Schrader's reputation. There's clearly an artist at work. in his filmmaking. And that's uncommon already. Most people are trying to sell something. And Paul is trying to create something and trying to say something. And so that's exciting as an actor. Even though I have such admiration for Paul, if I didn't see myself excelling in the world, if it didn't speak to me, I probably wouldn't do it. One of the things that's hard about when you get yourself in a position where you can become castable, you can green light a movie or something, well, you can't trust the casting of you. Like when you're an aspiring actor, if you get cast in a part, it's because you were right for it. You did a great audition and everybody saw that you were, you know, you could really excel here. And if you're Tom Cruise, for example, everybody wants him to play every part. And so it's very hard for him to kind of go, well, actually, where would I excel? Because I can't trust the fact that they want to hire me doesn't mean I'm right for the role.
When you're acting in a movie like this, do you know that you're doing well? Because it's a really great performance. What happens when you're able to do something as well as you're able to do in this film?
I would say at this point in my life, my relationship to my acting when it's doing well is my relationship to myself. It's connected to, for lack of a better word, my own wants and needs. And what's so exciting about having a director that takes care of the angles and takes care of he's a leader on set. He knows what he wants. So all I have to do is be Reverend Toler in the context that it's being framed and find out how to make each one of these shots as exciting and visceral and alive to the best of my ability of what these years have taught me.
Coming up, more of my conversation with actor and filmmaker Ethan Hawke. Now we pick up my conversation with actor and filmmaker Ethan Hawke. He has three films coming out in the next couple of months: Juliet Naked, adapted from the Nick Hornby novel of the same name; Blaze, about the musician Blaze Foley, which Hawke co-wrote and directed; and First Reformed, which is out this week. It's written and directed by Paul Schrader. In the film, Hawke plays Reverend Toler, a preacher experiencing a crisis of faith. We pick up my conversation with Hawke, talking about how he approaches the roles that he plays.
I'm supposed to put real time and thought and energy into putting something on screen, on that celluloid. Like, I want my blood on there, something so that it's worth your time. You know, when the obvious example being on the waterfront when he's screaming, "I'm not a rat," you know, that's not just a movie. It is a movie. It's functioning with all the same rules and there's a story, but you feel something personal at work. We are talking to each other. You, audience, me, filmmaker, we are communicating. We are having a dialogue. And acting at its best is that. It's, I have a secret. Do you see it? I don't want to tell you. It's an interpretive art that way. I'm interpreting Reverend Toler for you so that I can spend several months thinking about this guy and you can spend 90 minutes and walk away with everything I learned and how it applies to your life.
I want to ask you about Blaze Foley. This is a film that you directed and co-wrote.
I'm going down to the Greyhound station, gonna get a ticket to ride, gonna find that lady with two or three kids and sit down by her side.
A lot of musicians like Merle Haggard, Lyle Lovett, John Prine know who Blaze Foley was. A lot of other people don't.
Yeah.
So for the people who don't, is important about Blaze Foley's music, and then we'll talk about his life.
It's a really funny thing is I walk around introducing the movie and things like that. Often people say to me, "I'm sorry, I don't know who Blaze Foley is." That's why we made the movie. We know you don't. That's the point. One of the things that I find frustrating about watching musical biopics, and I did one on Chet Baker, you know, and they're all about famous musicians.
Right.
And if you live your life in the arts, you meet all kinds of musicians, people who practice a guitar, the trumpet, every day. They dedicate their life to listening to the weirdest Muddy Waters recording that was lost, and they love this peculiar bridge that Muddy did that one afternoon, and they love it. And they're not rewarded with Grammys and millions of dollars. Like we all can write a musical biopic. He's struggling. He came from a poor family. Something really bad happened where he has hurt. Then he finds his voice. Then he gets signed. Then the demons of success come in. And I wanted to make a movie that celebrated an artist that the world didn't celebrate. that was met with absolute indifference, like almost all the artists I know, right? I wanted to do that movie. And also, but a serious artist, you know? And I also combined it in the movie is another, you know, Townes Van Zandt plays a character. Townes Van Zandt was a genius.
Well, if I needed you, would you come to me? Would you come to me and ease my pain? If you need
Townes Van Zandt was one of the great, I think one of the great American poets the last 100 years. I think he's, you know, the William Faulkner of country music, and that's a different thing. You know, genius, like Robin Williams is one of the few people, you know, who was an actual genius, you know, whose brain worked a different way, and he could make art out of anything. And so the movie's trying to play around in different levels of artistry.
Lucinda Williams said of Blaze Foley, he was a genius and a beautiful loser. And that seems to be almost the organizing principle for this film, that you are going to celebrate what made him a remarkable songwriter, but you're also going to look at his self-destructive nature, mm-hmm. and you're not going to shy away from either.
In a lot of ways, the prototype for the character is Falstaff, a beautiful loser. I mean, Falstaff, the bohemian, you know, a guy
kind of big, burly guy with a beard.
Yeah, big, burly guy with a beard, likes to drink, likes to get in fights, likes to sing songs, and doesn't give a about success. He was instantaneously distrustful of anyone who was successful, about what their agendas were, about what their level of self-aggrandizement would be. You can be sure he wouldn't be a fan of the present administration.
And what is it about Blaze and his ability to play music or be recognized as an artist that you related to personally, and how it connected to the things that motivate a lot of artists and about being recognized even if you don't succeed?
Well, I've always been interested, and I've had a lot of friends that almost seem to have an allergy to success, that there's something, as soon as something is commodified or turned into a unit of sale, that it's somehow less. And what does that say about the artists who are good at commodifying their art and commercializing? And the intersection of business and art is at the forefront of anybody making movies, because of all the art forms, movies have been kind of eaten alive by big business. And they've just turned it into an industry. They put in the newspaper how much money they make. They rate your critical success and compare it to others. It's turning everything into a competition, which is at its essence the opposite of self-expression. Self-expression has no competition. I mean, what I find so fascinating about First Reformed as a film, Paul Schrader's film, is that it's just reminiscent of a kind of art film that doesn't get made anymore. It's like a Bergman film or something.
No, it's very old-fashioned.
It's super old-fashioned. You're kind of like, nobody even tries to do this anymore. He's not selling anything. And I think that's what's arresting about it and kind of thrilling about it. Because even your basic indie art house movie is still trying to be a studio movie. It still wants to win an Oscar. It's still hoping to crack 50 mil, you know, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, you know.
You're saying all this, and I'm thinking about the third film you have coming out, which is Juliet Naked, the adaptation of the Nick Hornby novel. And like About a Boy, it's a book and a story about the opposite side of fame. And success doesn't mean that things are going to work out. And fame doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be good for the person who is famous. That in some ways, First Reformed, but especially Blaze and Juliet Naked, are telling very different stories of what it means to be recognized and what it means to have an impact on the world.
Don't you love that this old prayer, Lord, protect me from what I want? You know, it's a very beautiful sentiment. And I don't know why it seems so important to me, but throughout my life, I've really wrestled. Maybe it's because it came so young, but I've really wrestled uncomfortably with the position of celebrity. Something about it has always struck me as dishonest and fake. And there's no doubt for me that River's death, you know, River Phoenix was my first scene partner, you know. And so, you know, he's the first person of my generation to be kind of starting to really develop and blossom as an artist. My own Private Idaho, like when we all saw that, it was like, oh, River's not just like getting jobs, he's expressing himself. It's like he's an actor artist. And that was very exciting and jealousy inducing. Like, whoa, You know, it's hard not to think that celebrity played an impact on his death. You know, it's hard not for me not to believe that. And so I instantaneously, it wasn't like an intellectual conversation to talk about, hey, being a celebrity is lame, man. It was like, oh, wait, if you buy into that, you can possibly kill yourself. But even worse sometimes is believing in lies and falsehoods. And I see a lot of people when they get successful, they kind of enter formaldehyde.
What does that mean to you?
They get stuck there.
Right.
You know, sometimes you see the obvious example happens with child actors where they stop growing. They literally stop growing. And you see it with Michael Jackson or Elvis or something. It's like they're now on display. And they cease to slowly, it's almost like swallowing poison. The more the celebrity gets, the more poison you eat. And because you're getting separated from other people.
I want to ask you if there's such a thing as a little knowledge being a dangerous thing, because you've obviously acted in a ton of movies. Mm-hmm. You've also directed, you've mm-hmm. also produced, and mm-hmm. you've written not just screenplays, but novels. With that background, with all of that information, does it change your perspective on other people's jobs and how they're approaching their work? And do you start saying, well, if I were doing the producing, I'd do it differently if I were directing? How do you isolate yourself as an actor and just say, I'm going to set aside all those other things I know how to do and just do what I've been asked to do?
What's hard about being 47 and having acted since I was 13, and I find myself in a situation where I have a boss who's never done this before. And I spent 30-something years on a film set. And it is hard sometimes to be the right kind of partner that really lets them make mistakes. And I get less and less interested in being on a set where I have to watch somebody, I have to let them make mistakes when I know they're making a mistake. It's like being a first mate on a ship and there's like a giant storm over there in the Sea of Cortez and they're going, let's go to the Sea of Cortez. You're like, you know, I can tell by the wind, I can tell by the clouds, I can tell by the air. And they go, no, it's going to be great. And you're like, yeah, except it really won't be great. And they still go, you know, oh, you know.
Before you know it, it's man overboard.
Exactly.
Ethan Hawke, great to see you.
Great to see you.
Coming up, should some PG-13 films, which now have more violence than ever before, really be rated PG-15. Some parents think so.
Big brown eyes, got friends in the country. No neckties, love big cheeseburgers and good french fries. Could go fish, but fish draw flies. Could go swimming if it ain't too deep. Rather to sit and rest my feet. No, I ain't lazy, cause I don't like to sleep. Might just be lazy.